talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog of dying. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. Some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a part of diabetes. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fog of diabetes. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. With lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people, the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and of course, all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, lots more interesting things to look at. There is a war going on between big high-tech companies and freedom. Some of the left libs in high-tech companies are making war on white nationalist websites. The Daily Stormer was recently taken down, just amazing things that have happened. Taken down, I'm going to give some additional details. And the same has happened to Stormfront. Now, Daily Stormer has returned. No thanks to the, and this is outright persecution of people. This is really big high tech companies arbitrarily canceling people's websites and all the content. It's scary, and this is war. We are in a war for our civilization. It's a war of freedom. For freedom of speech, some of the our desperate enemies are big businesses. And let's put it this way: as we fight this through, we will not forget those who have done these things to us. This is from the Daily Stormer. Punished Stormer, a website denied its domain name. Yeah. They stole its domain name. But this is about Stormfront. I've been with Stormfront on and off for many, many years. I guess it's the early 2000s. For a number of years, I did Stormfront Radio, where I was the Midnight Man. Don Black really was the first white nationalist to... he was among the very first people to understand the power and the importance of the Internet. And formed what was then called a bulletin board, and that was Stormfront. And this would be, I think, back in 1992, and he's run it ever since. It's the great granddaddy of white nationalism, done fantastic work. Anyway, this is about Stormfront. Stormfront.org is the latest pro-white site to have had their domain grabbed. They are put in the same client-hold purgatory that DailyStormer.com is presently being held in by Google. I believe they are the second site to have this happen to them. I don't believe that it ever happened to the Rebel Media. I believe he made that up. That was Ezra Levant. He was on the Enom, and he just said, "They're shutting me down," and then moved his domain. He was trying to attach himself onto our public situation and gain media attention for his collapsing company, period. It was a hoax. If I were Enom, I would sue for libel. Stormfront did not make an offensive fat joke about a dead fat woman killed in a road rage accident. They just got shut down because they are white people, and white people are no longer allowed free speech. And I agree with that. That we are in a war for our freedoms. Someone, we all knew this was coming. Someone hilariously, in a gallows humor sort of way, the domain was registered with Network Solutions, which charges a large amount of money on the promise that you'll be protected. This is as funny as two free speech registrars, Namecheap and Dreamhost, kicking out my domains. We have entered a new era of censorship, where the same people who force Christians to bake cakes for anal marriages are saying, "Oh, but these trillion-dollar multinational companies that control the entire internet are privately owned, so they can do whatever they want to you and me, and you have no recourse." And of course, that is part of the problem. Basically, at this point, I want to see how many sites. I want to see as many sites shut down as possible. Says this is Andrew Anglin of the Daily Stormer. It's time for a troll storm. We need to get these companies to start following their own rules and start shutting down all offensive content, as that is what's going to force government regulation the quickest. ICANN must be repossessed by the U.S. Department of Commerce, and the issuance of domains must be done the same way as the issuance of phone numbers, trademarks, driver's licenses, building permits, etc., etc. Alternately, ICANN could simply be bypassed, and the government could just create its own system for issuing domain names. You see that? What they did is they took down Stormfront's domain name. We need to start creating this list of terrorism and pedophile sites being hosted by these companies and demand their shutdown. With the pedophile sites, I believe we can work with child protection groups. We should also try to have a normie conservative site shut down, excluding National Review. Strangely, none of these people defended us, so I give zero damn. I'm going to say I'm reading Andrew Anglin's editorial here, and it's a bit of it is, I think maybe a little saltier than I'd want to go. But let me spend a few hours gaming this out in my brain. The goal here is to force as many shutdowns as possible. And it doesn't really matter who. Pedophiles and terrorists are the easy targets. Someone find that list of ISIS sites that Anonymous submitted to Cloudflare. Even if these companies hold out, we need to make noise that they are hosting or protecting terrorists and pedophiles. In other words, just make it make it a firestorm. Now here's what Daily Pigeon says, and I'm going to play his comments. The worst thing about censorship, Goebbels was in favor of free speech for views he liked. So was Stalin. If you're really in favor of free speech, then
Google
you're...
Google and Apple hold a combined 98% market share in mobile phone operating systems. But what few people yet understand is that Google and Apple have used their duopoly status to revoke the First Amendment on mobile phones. Because the internet is now majority mobile, and a growing majority of all web traffic comes from mobile devices, the First Amendment is now effectively dead in the mobile sphere unless policymakers act to rein in these tech giants who serve as corporate gatekeepers to digital speech. At minimum, Apple and Google's decisions about offensive app behavior are arbitrary, completely arbitrary. And this is a problem the market can't easily solve because there effectively is no market. Both the Apple and Google app stores are private markets owned by those companies, which act as their effective governments. You can't easily start a new mobile business without their permission. These tech giants, along with a small assorted number of social media, dominate the internet and have now become the arbiters of what can and cannot be said. They are the be-all and end-all. They have the first and last word on who can speak and what they can speak about. And this is certainly the case with the new social media platform, Gab, with a motto of, whatever is permissible under the First Amendment is what Gab allows onto its site. And because Gab's site is centered around freedom of speech, their mobile app was banned by the Google Play Store. Nice, right? Freedom of speech has long been loathed by governments around the world, and this is why we're seeing ever more restrictions on what one can say throughout the so-called Free West. And this is similar to what Rebel Media, who were given 24 hours notice that they were being denied service for their website, have just undergone. It's chilling. The only nation left in the world that has the right to freedom of speech is the United States, but as president of the National Policy Institute, Richard Spencer, has pointed out, getting kicked off Facebook or YouTube or PayPal or whatever, this is effectively losing the ability to speak. It is actually a more powerful form of censorship than it would be if a government were to censor. And this is just such a case with one Andrew Anglin and his website, The Daily Stormer. This deletion of his voice is dangerous for everyone. Usually, you have the professionally offended trying to have pretty much anything that hurts their fragile egos deleted from social media accounts by appealing to the leftists that dominate in these tech companies. But this is different. In case you don't know, The Daily Stormer is what I would call a cartoonish-like website that seeks to offend just for the reason it seeks to do so. And Anglin is much like the mustache-twirling villain of early cinema, and much of what is produced and printed on that now-defunct website borders on what I would call satire. And having listened to commentator Ramsey Paul's take on that site, which he believes is probably funded by the likes of the ADL to give that group relevance, as well as being an agent provocateur, because much of the write-ups on that site are almost fiendishly theatrical for the professionally and perpetually offended. So what happened was this: Cloudflare terminated service to the Daily Stormer, and both Google and GoDaddy also banned the Daily Stormer last week, with Google locking the website's domain so that it was unable to be moved, essentially stealing the domain. But it is the double standards, or no standards for that matter, that these merchants in self-righteousness trade in that makes this takedown, domain theft, and those like it much more concerning. In his own words, Cloudflare CEO Matthew Prince said that he woke up in a bad mood and decided that someone shouldn't be allowed on the internet. And this was following his company's decision to terminate services to the Daily Stormer. He continued, "This was my decision. Our terms of service reserve the right for us to terminate users of our network at our sole discretion. My rationale for making this decision was simple. The people behind the Daily Stormer are assholes, and I'd had enough. Let's be clear, this was an arbitrary decision. It was a decision I could make because I'm the CEO of a major internet infrastructure company." I see. However, in 2015, the same Mr. Prince defended himself after facing pressure to rescind services to ISIS-affiliated sites. You know them, ISIS, the ones that film children shooting people in the head, amongst other assorted and ghoulish ways of murdering people. Well, on ISIS, he said, individuals have decided that there is content they disagree with, but the right way to deal with this is to follow the established law enforcement procedures. And this was just after a hacking collective provided Cloudflare with a list of ISIS-related websites. He continued, there is no society on earth that tolerates mob rule because the mob is fickle. Except, of course, when you, Mr. Prince, Google, Apple, and GoDaddy comprise that mob and deny freedom of speech to others, I see. Anyway, he further continued to defend himself with regards to ISIS when he said, we're the plumbers of the internet. We make the pipes work, but it's not right for us to inspect what is going on through the pipes. If companies like ours or ISPs start censoring, there would be an uproar. It would lead us down a path of internet censors and control akin to a country like China. Good God, the hypocrisy and double standards of these people never ceases to amaze me. And 2 years later, here we are, stealing domain addresses, locking people essentially out of the internet because people like Mr. Prince don't like what they have to say, all the while defending the rights of groups like ISIS, who not only say offensive things, but murder people on camera in some of the most gruesome ways humanly possible, and then distribute it via the services of these same hypocritical plumbers. And this isn't China at all, because at least in China, they blanket everything and aren't arbitrary about it. Because these Silicon Valley companies are not and should never be the arbiters of what people can and cannot say. And they're just companies that provide a service, nothing more. And they are not the moral guardians of Western civilization. I don't need some pink-haired, nose-ringed, tatted-up, non-binary zur telling me what I can and cannot say or can and cannot read. And returning now to Richard Spencer, companies like Google and Facebook aren't covered by the First Amendment, which applies only to the federal government, but Spencer feels that these companies are so large that the government needs to step in, just as it did with broadcasting. Spencer says otherwise there won't be freedom of speech. He continues, these are the free speech platforms in the 20th century. So if we're going to regulate all of these 20th century ways of expressing ourselves, then why are we so loath to regulate the 21st century ones, which are much more relevant and much more vital? So let me be clear. We don't let public utilities make arbitrary and secretive decisions about denying people services, and we shouldn't let Google do so either. Which is why the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which is best known for its activism surrounding net neutrality, has a simple message. Even though you don't agree with the message of sites like the Daily Stormer, banning people from the internet is a slippery slope. Cindy Cohn, EFF CEO, wrote in a blog post that we strongly believe that what GoDaddy, Google, and Cloudflare did here was dangerous. The blog post reflected years-long tension in Silicon Valley, where many company executives want to distance themselves from extremists, but are concerned that picking and choosing what is acceptable on their platforms could invite more regulation from governments. Cohn continued, protecting free speech is not something we do because we agree with all of the speech that gets protected. We do it because the power to decide who gets to speak and who doesn't is just too dangerous to hand over to any company or any government. 1984, in the guise of companies protecting you from offensive ideas, has arrived. If you don't speak out now, then don't cry when it's you and your opinions in the dock. Cultural revolutions like the one forming right now tend to get ugly and morph completely out of the control of those that instigate them. This is dangerous. This is an attack on the First Amendment, and if people in the US do not speak up now, they will become just as muzzled as those in Canada, Europe, and yes, China. Thanks for watching. If you like this kind of material, please consider subscribing. Also, see the channel Thomas Baden Reese. He's got some very interesting material, and I'm pretty sure you'll probably like it. Link is in the description.
And that was a commentary by Black Pigeon, and about this really incredible escalation of censorship by some of these big media giants. Here's a very interesting development. You know, one of the things we have to remember is who the enemies of free speech really are. The group that has persistently pushed for censorship in Canada are the various Jewish lobby groups. In days gone by, the Canadian Jewish Congress. They went out of existence, or actually, well, more accurately, morphed into the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs. A separate Jewish group, the League for Human Rights of B'nai B'rith, which has nothing to do with human rights, but is simply a lobby for Israel, and human rights has, for them, has nothing to do with freedom of speech. They've been a persistent lobby against free speech in Canada, or for more restrictions on free speech. And then, bringing up the rear, so to speak, the Friends of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, although they've actually made their name even more ponderous, if possible, they now style themselves the Friends of the Simon Wiesenthal Center for Holocaust Studies. Anyway, well, what are they up to? Well, they want more repression in Canada and Ontario. Jews urge Ontario Attorney General, who's a Muslim, to stand up to hate. Let's never forget who the persistent enemies of free speech are. The petition launched Friday by the Friends of the Simon Wiesenthal Center for Holocaust Studies says no charges were laid in relation to an Al-Quds Day, that's Jerusalem Day, held out in Queen's Park on June 24th, where speakers expressed anti-Semitism and Holocaust denial, as well as spoke in favor of the annihilation of the Jewish people in Israel. It would be interesting to have direct quotations rather than just that summary. Friends of the Simon Wiesenthal Center also want an action against Your Ward News, a publication deemed so highly offensive by the federal government that it ordered Canada Post to stop delivering it. Over the last couple of years, Friends of the Simon Wiesenthal Center has filed a number of hate crime-related complaints with police and with the Attorney General's office. We have expressed our concern over hateful rallies at Queen's Park, like Al-Quds Day, and hateful publications like Your Ward News. A.V. Ben-Lolo, president and CEO of Friends of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, said in a statement, "Unfortunately, the response has been inadequate, and this seems to have only emboldened both white supremacist groups and Islamic groups who have both called for our annihilation." Well, nobody that I know of among white nationalists has called for the annihilation of Jews. That's just one more bit of hyperbolic vaudeville fantasy on the part of Mr. Ben-Lolo. The online Friends of the Simon Wiesenthal Stand Up to Hate petition at Friends of the Simon Wiesenthal Center .com/petition asks the Attorney General to take immediate action to prosecute hate crimes and reply effectively to community concerns. Emily Smith, a spokesman for the Ministry of the Attorney General, said in an email that Friends of the Simon Wiesenthal Center should be commended for its efforts to raise awareness about the impact of hate crimes and speech in communities. The province shares a commitment to standing up to hate in all its forms across Ontario. Well, what about the hatred of Christians? What about that, the circulation of that book called the Talmud, with some hideous stuff in there? I guess they didn't mean that, did they? The Attorney General's office, Attorney General's responsibility under federal criminal code is to provide consent to allow hate crime charges to go forward upon referral by the police. And that so the Attorney General can take a look at the evidence and decide whether or not to prosecute. So it's a discretionary thing. In July, Naqvi, that's our Muslim, Pakistani Muslim Attorney General, gave his consent to police to proceed with a charge of willful promotion of hatred against Kevin Johnson, author of the Freedom Report. I know Kevin Johnson. He, like I, ran for mayor of Mississauga back in 2014. He, like I, was not successful, though I got more votes than he did. Anyway, the charge, unproven in court, was laid after Johnson, according to media reports, posted a YouTube video offering $1,000 for recordings of Muslim students praying in Peel Region schools. This is not a complete report. He did not offer $1,000 for a video, for students taking a video of other Muslim students praying. It was would only give the money if what was being said in the prayers was hatred, hatred against non-Muslims. That's what it was about. This, as so often happens with our lamestream media, is just plain nonsense reporting. This is a report actually in the Toronto Sun. Quote, "There's a responsibility that the Attorney General takes extremely seriously in every case," Smith said, "about hate crimes in general. Where charges are laid, Ontario prosecutes these cases vigorously." Well, I have no reason to doubt that. The commitment of most of our mass media many of our politicians to freedom of speech is basically non-existent. But this is a war we're in, and it's a war where I think we've got to start clearly outlining to people that their actions will be remembered. And whether that's Google or Yahoo or whatever, or people who shut down websites, or groups like the Friends of the Simon Wiesenthal Center. What goes around comes around. And I think at every opportunity, they should be reminded that we know and we remember that they are the mortal enemies of free speech. By their own admission, they are the ones who have tried to shut people down, get people charged, and I think the days when we can take this, let them get away with it, are passing. At the very least, they have to be fingered on every occasion as the enemies of freedom. That call them what they are. They are censors. They are a mean group of people who want to deny freedom to other Canadians, the freedom of speech. Miserable little totalitarians. Now, a point I like to make, and I made this in regard to a story I dealt with a few days ago, and this is a story of the same Friends of the Simon Wiesenthal Center lurking around a flea market in Pickering, Ontario. And they're all upset because there's a booth there that was selling National Socialist memorabilia. Oh my God, no! And they said, well, this is improper. These things should only appear, if anywhere, in a Holocaust museum. And it's terrible that some people would even want to collect them. That some people should sell them. And they even estimated the value of these are medals and pictures and stamps from the National Socialist era. It was that they're outraged that people would be allowed to buy them, or that there's a market for them. Whereas I think a far better approach to this sort of thing is to say, look, you people came from Europe. You or your near ancestors, you came and you took advantage of our hospitality. You claim you're fleeing persecution and so on. And this is what you do to your adoptive country. You want to take away our rights to freedom of speech. And nobody would say that a person doesn't have a right to own communist memorabilia, you know, a hammer and sickle flag. In fact, I even saw them flying in Toronto during a recent anti-racist action protest back on July, I think it'll be July the 15th. I don't like those flags, but I would never say a person shouldn't be allowed to fly a hammer and sickle flag, or have a hammer and sickle communist memorabilia. However, there are people in our society that want to restrict your ability to sell, if you're so inclined, or to purchase National Socialist memorabilia, even Hitler stamps. And I think we've got to put it to these people and put it out there publicly, that we notice who the people are that are trying to take away our freedoms. Not only do we notice who they are, but I want to task them with utter ingratitude. You claimed, or your ancestors claimed, that you were fleeing from persecution in Tsarist Russia, or more recently in Germany between the wars. Okay, right or wrong, we let you in. And this is the way you repay us. Now, I think we've got to make it personal and emotional. It's not just we're not just fighting for ideals. We are, of course, but like freedom of speech. But I want to make it personal. How dare you people come from other countries, accept our hospitality and treat us this way, to take away the freedoms that you came here to participate in. Yeah, I think we've got to be just a little more direct. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and I will take a short musical interlude here. And this is one of the really famous Dwight Yoakam tunes, and this is Dwight saying, I just lost this here. turn it on, turn it up, turn me loose. Dwight Yoakam.
Driving me low.
that's Dwight Yoakam. Turn It On, Turn It Up, Turn Me Loose. One of his big ones there. And here's another one, I think, in keeping with the times. Dwight Yoakam, I Sang Dixie.
I asked Dwight myself to sing this song because I liked it so much. It's a song that he wrote, and in fact, it was number one after Streets of Bakersfield, and I think it's a great song, and I know you heard it, but I don't know if you heard it quite like this. It's just him and his guitar, and that's the way I asked him to do it. And it's called Dixie. Now, you need to listen really close to the words because it's really a magnificent song. Dwight, ready.
Thank you, Buck. Actually, I wrote this after I'd been in L.A. a few years, and I'd been out there. My brother had come out to visit, and we were wandering around Hollywood one night, saw some stuff go on that kind of disturbed both of us, and a week or so later, I was home, and I started writing this, and it turned out to be a pretty good one for me.
Number one, pretty good.
I sang Dixie yesterday. People just walked on by as I cried. Bottle had red hot tin of all these red devil cries. So I sang Dixie. Wow. Settle way down yonder in the land of cotton. The old times are as rotten as they are on this damned old LA street. They drew the dying breath and laid his head against my chest. Please, Lord, take his soul back home to Dixie. And I sang Dixie as he died. People just walked on by as I cried. I sang Dixie as he died. He said, listen to me, son, while you still can, run back home to that southern land. Don't you see what life here has done to me? Then he closed those old gray eyes and fell limp against my side. No more pain. Now he's safe back home in Dixie. And I sang Dixie as he died. People just walked on by as I cried. The bottle had run out of him of all his red devil cries. So I sang Dixie as he died. Yeah, I sang Dixie as he died.
And that was Dwight Yoakam, introduced by the late and the great Buck Owens. I'll conclude our short musical interlude here with, I think you'll like this song. This is, of course, kind of a gospel song. It's a song made famous in the mid-70s by the late June Carter Cash and Johnny Cash, The Far Side Banks of Jordan, and this is sung by Jimmy Fortune.
I believe my steps are growing wearier each day. Still still I've got a journey on my mind. Lures of this old world have ceased to make me want to stay. And my one regret is leaving you behind. But I'll be waiting on the far side banks of Jordan. I'll be sitting drawing pictures in the sand. And when I see you coming, I will rise up with a shout. If it proves to be his will that I am first to cross, somehow I'll have a feeling it will be. When it comes your time to travel, likewise don't feel lost. For I will be the first one that you'll see. And I'll be waiting on the far side banks of Jordan. Sitting, drawing pictures in the sand. And when I see you coming, I will rise up with a shout and come running through the shallow waters, reaching for your hand. Through this life, we've labored hard to earn our meager fare. It's brought us trembling hands and failing eyes. So I'll just rest here on this shore and turn my eyes away. Until you come, then we'll see paradise. But I'll be waiting on the far side banks of Jordan. Pictures in the sand. And when I see you coming, I will rise up with a shout and come running through the shallow waters, reaching for your hand. And I'll be waiting on the far side banks of Jordan. I'll be sitting drawing pictures in the sand. When I see you coming, I will rise up with a shout and come running through the shallow waters, reaching for your hand. And I'll be running through the shallow waters, reaching for your hand.
And that's Jimmy Fortune. And the Far Side Banks of Jordan, an old gospel tune. I hope you like it. Outrageous thing happened in London, Ontario this past week. I think we have a establishment, a political establishment, in full panic. Absolutely full panic on immigration. I think they've seen the protests in the States. They know there are little protests here going on in Canada, and they see their order being
stating the Confederate flag in portraits of Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee should stay up unless the legislature...
Another thing here, intervened, and they see that order being challenged more and more. And there, the immigration order, utterly discredited. And any little bleating objections are now have to be slapped down. This has to do with London, Ontario, where Pegida, that's an anti-Muslim immigration group, announced they're going to have a protest this weekend. A move by city council to stand against all forms of racism is facing some backlash. Now, we wouldn't take about all forms of racism too seriously. Have they condemned Zionism? Oh, no, I guess not. Mayor Matt Brown introduced a last-minute motion at Tuesday's council meeting in response to plans by a nationalist group to rally at City Hall. Patriots of Canada Against the Islamicization of the West, or PEGIDA, announced a protest for today, and they got about 40 people out, and there a couple of hundred anti-racists, of course. Following several emotional pleas, council also passed the second part of the motion, which is now in dispute. It reads, the civic administration to be directed to prepare a council policy to confirm the prohibition of activities of organizations whose ideologies are contrary to the City of London in civic spaces and or city-owned facilities and spaces. Now, what are ideologies contrary to the City of London? What does the City of London stand for? Has there ever been a referendum as to these are the ideologies we stand for? What would it be? Liberalism? Conservatism? Socialism? Communism? None of the above? Populism? Monarchism? I mean, this is madness. But this passed unanimously. These people are idiots. Amir Farahi, the executive director of the London Institute, a non-profit think tank, agrees bigotry and hate shouldn't have a place in London, but insists the second part of council's motion is problematic and wants it repealed. Well, I'm not even sure I agree with Mr. Farahi that far. bigotry and hate have no place in London. Well, how do you outlaw hate? How do you outlaw what somebody might feel? Bigotry, what's that? Standing strongly by an irrational opinion, standing strongly by an opinion I think's irrational. I mean, it's just name calling. Anyway, what that is telling us is that we have anyone who has an ideology that's contrary to that of the City of London, that's London, Ontario City Council, that they're potentially no longer permitted to express that opinion. And I fundamentally believe that goes against our Charter of Rights. It absolutely does. it's so vague. What is the ideology the city doesn't allow? Communism? I don't believe in communism, but what if a group of communists, as they often do, have a little protest, and it's on city property, let's say in front of City Hall? that wouldn't be allowed? Well, how does the city, what's the ideology of the City of London in terms of, global warming? Are they radical global warming fanatics? In which case, let's say a protest against the carbon tax would be an ideology they don't agree with? Or what if they're the other way? Well, that means it would mean a green protest wouldn't be allowed. Yeah, it's not just that these fools are so ridiculous, but it's that this actually you passed unanimously. Did anybody think? And apparently this guy Farahi has brought in a petition more than 100 signatures. Farahi's family is from Iran. Said he watched in horror as political activists were silenced and even killed after the 2009 elections in that country. Farahi said his family comes from a family of immigrants from a region where freedom of speech has been eroded throughout history. Bit by bit, those in power have taken away all of their freedoms, especially freedom of expression. So I'm very sensitive on this topic, Farahi says. The city implemented a bylaw in the early 2000s that restrict groups from sending offensive, derogatory, or abusive messages while on city property. Offensive, derogatory, or abusive messages. Well, you can only say nice things. Idiots. The mayor said Tuesday's motion is intended to reinforce existing regulations. This is a motion that formalizes and communicates very clearly that council fully endorses this policy. No, it's talking about silencing groups or ideologies that are contrary to the City of London, whatever that is. If a public group wishes to hold a demonstration on city-owned property, it would have to request a permit, which has to be approved by city staff. Brown said the country's Charter of Rights and Freedoms, as well as the Criminal Code, is taken into account during the bylaw enforcement procedure. Racism and hate have no place in our community, and we're going to do everything we can possibly do to communicate that very clearly as a council, but also as a community. Wait a second. Racism and hate. Now, is that an ideology? What's racism? I would say a state of Israel is racism, you know. Israel for the Jews. They don't have that in mind. Okay, but if I say, well, Canada for Europeans because we're the founding settler of people, oh, you're a racist. Racism and hate. Well, who exactly is expressing hate? Is not wanting your country taken over by foreign invaders hate? I don't know. As for Farai, he said his council's job isn't to determine what may or may not be deemed offensive. He emphasized that laws are meant to protect victims of hate speech. Someone could be promoting something that may be offensive to someone, but it doesn't mean it shouldn't be tolerated. Even though it's offensive, isn't necessarily hate speech. Well, that is true. Several councillors, including the mayor, are set to attend counter-protests to take what they describe as a public stance against racism. The mayor. So he's against racism. you gotta believe that we are dealing with serious idiots here. Here's an interesting story. Belgian soldiers fatally shoot an attacker in Brussels. Belgian soldiers shot dead a man in the center of Brussels on Friday evening after he came at them with a knife, shouting "Allahu Akbar." That's God is at the bar. No, God is great. In a case authorities are treating as a terrorist attack. The man, a 30-year-old, guess what? Somali. It's immigration, stupid. Bringing in people, allowing in people from radically different cultures who don't fit in. It's immigration, stupid. Anyway, this Somali is hollering, "Allahu Akbar." The soldiers were not seriously hurt in the attack. One had a facial wound and another's hand was wounded. Well, okay, maybe not deep penetration, but they were hurt. Prosecutors said the man, who is not known for terrorist activities, had twice shouted "Allahu Akbar" during the attacks, which occurred around 8:15 p.m. on local time on a Friday night. Just outside the city's central pedestrian zone, while soldiers were on patrol. Brussels Mayor Philippe Clos said the alert status, already just one off the maximum, had not been increased. Initial indications are, he said, that this is an isolated terrorist attack, a single person. Soldiers routinely patrol the streets of the Belgian capital because of a heightened security alert level after Islamist shooting and the bomb attacks on Paris in 2015 and in Brussels in 2016. Of course, the Islamic attacks, horrific attack on Bastille Day, July 14th, 1916. Sorry, 2016, in Nizza in France. In June, troops shot dead a suspected suicide bomber at Brussels Central Rail Station. And he was a Muslim too. You see, I think we must constantly hammer home to other citizens the folly of massive immigration from Islamic countries. They pose a real problem. This is a message from a good friend of mine, Joe Thauberger, and he says, It's Zionists who have created, who sought to create this perennial war with Arabs. I don't want them here either. But Israel has repeatedly engaged in wars that have destroyed their countries. If you dislike, you'll discover that, we are on the same side, fighting our common enemy from an entirely different location on the planet. And I agree with him, with Joe in Regina, that Zionism is a thorn in the side of the Middle East. It has led to a lot of wars and a lot of the discontent in the Muslim world. Not all, there are other reasons, but we should not be supporting the state of Israel or the state of Israel's wars. Stupid and absolutely against our better interests. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. And I sign off, all those are Eastern Standard Time, and I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the Real Canada, which has just, what hasn't, the Maple Leaf, forever.